In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. It's often that you've heard that the gospel that we preach is for today, for yesterday, and for tomorrow. I want you to think about the miracles that we have witnessed to as we are hearers of those who have the very profound grace of having seen and believe and written down those things that are called by us Scripture. In the first miracle, the wedding of Cana of Galilee, the Lord turned water into wine. Now, they didn't know in the first, the second, the third centuries, although there were a group of Greeks called atomists, and they believed very clearly about little tiny things that made up much bigger things. But think about it. How do you turn water into wine? With water, all you have to work with is hydrogen and oxygen. Where does the carbon come from? Now, so we know today this is a very clear proof that the Lord, from whose mouth, God bless you, that's three, the Lord from whose mouth came to make everything that was made, as it says in the Gospel of John in the first chapter, without him was not anything made that was made. You find this very, very clear understanding. But they didn't see it in the same way that we have the privilege of seeing it now. They didn't see it in the way when Jesus walked on water. They just saw him walking on water. They didn't know that he had the ability to form the molecules of water so that they would be as hard as stone. And yet the character of the sea, when he was walking in it, to their eyes, it hadn't changed. The winds were whirling and the waves were pitching and he was walking. Jesus wasn't going up and down like this with the waves. He wasn't a surfer. He was walking. And when the five loaves and two fish, when they kept multiplying, they didn't multiply in accordance to the ability of the Lord. They multiplied in accordance with his concern about the people that were there. Had the Lord decided to make bread, the whole world would have been covered with bread. He made enough to feed everyone so that they were full, and enough again so that the pieces taken up by the disciples would each fill a large basket, such as the one that we use to put our orban in. When the Lord decided to make the eyes of the man who was born blind, some of the fathers said that he had no eyes, that all he had were holes. And some of the fathers say that no, he had eyes, they just didn't work. But whether his eyes were there and were non-functioning, or whether he made them in that moment, what did he make them with? He spat on the ground to show, first of all, that the ground itself was not the reason for the miracle, but it was his introduction into the ground that made the eyes. He told them to go and wash in the pool of Siloam, but he didn't want the people to think that Siloam, that the pool had some magic quality, like if you go into the pool, that you're going to be healed of something. I meant to say this a couple of weeks ago. You know, when we were speaking about how people become superstitious, when I learned to baptize in the monastery of Saint Michoy, it happened to be on some feast, and there were so many children, so many babies, I mean, so many people that were involved. And mothers who wished to get pregnant and to have children wanted to drink from the Mama Dea, because it had some magical quality. All of these children, I mean, out of the womb of the church, which is the baptistry, out of the womb of the church, all these babies had come, and they wanted babies in their womb. This was the kind of the thing that the Lord wanted to dispel. So he used saliva to moisten the earth and not some special water. And he used a simple earth that was available to him, because the one who put the stars in the heavens and made all that was made was doing the same work. And he was doing this in the way that if the Jews had not been so worried about their loss of status, that they would have recognized that this is the God that we have been looking for. This is the Messiah. He says, my Father works and I work. Well, that's it. Who is this man? You know, we know his father and his mother. Before Abraham was, I am. This man is not yet 50 years old. Abraham is dead. They looked at every way that they could to try to bring some other explanation for what was right in front of them. You know, we do this too. It's unfortunate, but we do this too. We don't think that because of what we participate in on a regular basis has more than just a little psychological benefit. I remember when I owned a gym and I had sold vitamin supplements to this man, and he came back to me and he was angry because the vitamin supplements were expensive, were high quality vitamin supplements and things of that nature. And he said, these haven't done a thing for me. And I said, oh. I said, have you been sick in the last year? Well, no. Well, were you sick the year before? He walked away. You see, sometimes we don't think about what it is we receive in church. Sometimes you just are going to receive a word. You're looking for something way, way bigger. But that's not what you do when you go into other aspects of your life. You look to just incrementally keep going the things that provide you with health, that provide you with personal definition. You know, we work, say, oh, I don't like my job, you know, you take this job and shove it. Well, what would you do if somebody took your job from you? What would you do? Because that has happened to many people. If you think about the Jews themselves who suffered these things in Nazi Germany, when all of a sudden everybody who worked for the government or for any other institution were just fired, what did they do? There were merchants that kept going because the merchants had a class of people that would continue to be serviced by them, tailors and people that had grocery stores, doctors, pharmacists, things like that. Jews went to Jews and that kept going. But if your job were all of a sudden eliminated, what would you do? Who would you be? These little things like this we miss on a day-to-day basis that provide us with tremendous health. If you don't have, for example, gravity, imagine if you were born in outer space. You would just be a sack of meat. There'd be no bones. You would have no reason for bones. There would be no form to your body. You would be like one of those snails without a shell, called a slug. Have you ever seen one of those? How, not just how vulnerable they are, which they're very vulnerable, but how they're formless, and that would be us. All of these things give us dimension. The Lord looked at humankind and he said, there's something missing in all of these that I have created. They have a relationship with my Father, but they don't know how much further they can go until they receive sight. Jesus is the light of the world. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. But remember, as many as confessed God, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God, even them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor the will of the flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. You see, I have to bring the ability for people to really see deeply. I have to. And so in this man, who didn't call upon him, remember there's another blind man that was sitting by the way, and he was crying out, Jesus, 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 and they said, shh, 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 don't bother him. And he cried all the more, and he said, well, what will I do for you that I may receive my sight? Okay. This was not that man. This was a completely different man, and Jesus sought him out. Because he had every potential that all of us have, except the ability to see. To see what? Remember, we say this word about St. Mark all the time. P-theo-rimos evangelistis. P-theo-rimos. The beholder of God. How do you behold God? With your eyes. You see. You see inside. Jesus said, I don't mind if people are offended because I look like a man. Because I do look like a man. But I'm not merely a man. I am the Son of Man, but I am also the living Son of God. And I want you to see that. How are you going to see that? I must give you sight. So there's sight, and then the Jews had that, but they did not have insight. And they were willfully blind. The Lord didn't come to make people blind. It says in the end that we just prayed, it said, I have come so that those who do not see will see, and those who do see will be made blind. No, to be made blind means by comparison. They didn't lose their sight. They saw all of the things that they always had. They still saw Jesus. But you see, the whole point of this is that what is it that we are looking at, and what is it that we are looking with? What is the goal of our looking? You know, if you receive your sight, imagine the first time not being able to see until you're an adult. Oh, is that what a girl looks like? Wow, that's really attractive. Or, oh, what is that hanging from that tree? Oh, that's that fruit that I like to eat. How many things were there to capture the vision of the man who first received his sight? But Jesus came to him and said, do you believe in the Son of Man? He did, of course. Jesus knew the question was going to be answered correctly before he asked it. He knew the content of the man. He said, I believe, I believe, I believe. But who are you? I am he. Imagine this thing. He said this to the Samaritan woman as well, did he not? He said the same thing to the Samaritan. Can you imagine this great witness? The Lord is right in front of you, and you say, who are you, Lord? And by the way, the word Lord was used as a capital word, a capitalized word, and as a lowercase word. Many people would call it Lord. Many. But who is the Lord? Who with the big letters? And he says, it's me. And you look at him and you behold. Remember the confession in the upper room of Thomas. When he showed him the imprints of the nails, my Lord and my God. He wasn't able to say this until that, but it's the same kind of thing. What's vision for? Now, this is about our own baptism. You know, we are raised in the faith of our parents, and as children, we are brought to the church. Mina's going to bring Cyril, you know, in a couple of weeks. If you're at St. John's, you can catch it. Not here, because the Buna Shinoda beat me to it. But he's bringing him, his baby, in faith. He will be raised in faith. And the Lord, through baptism, is going to give him from the very beginning the ability to match his faith with the focus of his vision. Now, if this kid goes nuts like some kids do, His vision will take him other places. And it does not matter the faith of the parents. His vision will take him somewhere else. But without the baptism, even with the faith of the parents, the vision would not be possible to put these two things together. What is known in the heart, certainly, and what is seen then manifestly. When you come to take communion, what do you see? When you look at the church, what do you see? It's the house of God. This is why I was being tough with the young deacons. You're coming into a house that you have permission to come into, but you do not have permission to come in and relax or to mull about. And you have to learn this. You have to learn how to stand. Imagine if you have ever seen the military. If you've ever seen the military march, and then one guy just steps out of line because he feels like it. Or one guy goes over and then starts talking to his friend because he feels like it. They have a thing in the military, it's called the brig. Jail. And that's where you would be. Jail. And this is for what? This is just for the discipline that we teach our soldiers so that as a group they will operate as one man. And in here the deacons are supposed to be a chorus, to sing with one voice. And all of us are to come and not be distracted by all of the myriad of number of things. Not the least of which is all the little kids running around and all of the childless women, not childless because they've never had a child, but because they don't have a little tiny cute child anymore, playing with the child that runs around. No. All you're doing is encouraging the running around. And all you're doing is distracting yourself. And all you're doing is making an excuse because you're just being so kind and so nice and so loving and no, you're not. You're forgetting whose house you're in. You're forgetting what you came here for. You can do plenty of hugging and kissing and playing outside. You can go over to these people's houses and babysit while the parents get to have some time off by themselves if you really want to help. But you're not going to do any of that. No, in church, it's because it's available to me. I'll be distracted. I'll do this. You're forgetting. You know, sight, like any other gift that comes from God, is a two-edged sword. You know, if you are not careful, you can cut yourself. It's not just meant for slicing and dicing other things. I think this man was so remarkable. So remarkable in the way in which he answered the people that were accusers of Christ. You know, his parents, the ones who raised him, they were afraid of the Jews. But this blind man, who just had received sight, had strength and power and boldness beyond what his parents had. To be kicked out by the Jews, to be isolated from the Jews, to be told that you may not go into the synagogue or worship at the temple or to do any of these other things because you're confessing. How am I going to deny the gift that I've just been given? How am I going to do that? Think about the gift that all of us have been given in this church. This incredible gift to be able to call God Father. Right? Father. To be able to petition as children, knowing that if any child on earth has ever been rejected, that there is no chance in the world that that same child will be rejected by God, who created him. It's so important that our sight has more to do with where we are pointed going. I remember one of the first lessons I learned when I was racing cars. It sounds so silly that why would anybody say it? Look where you want the car to go. Now, I will tell you, when you are taking a turn at 9/10 of what the car is capable of doing, right? Don't say you're going to take it at 10/10, because I don't believe you. There's maybe a couple of people like that in the world that can do that. But when you just turn your car the first time when you exit the church, think of the panorama, the vista that you see. When you are racing a car, you're not to see any of that. You are to blind yourself. You are to look with tunnel vision where you want that car to go. And your eyes point that car where you want it to go. And every single time it must be repeated within hundredths of a second. Hundredths of a second. You aim the car by your eyes. You don't look like this or look like that. Or is somebody coming up from the back? Is somebody doing this? Not when you're in a turn. You might be able to afford that on the straightaway, but when you are making a turn, that's it. And that was the first lesson I received in racing. I used to race SCCA, Southern Sports Car Club of America. But I'm telling you, it works the same way with us. Where are your eyes looking? Where are you going? What are you going to do? You say, well, you know, when I get home, I got to cook some food for my husband, or I got to clean the house, or I'm... No, no, no. What are you going to do with your eyesight? Are you... How many here going to heaven? Where's heaven from here? Right from here. Irwindale, California. Now, where's heaven? Are you looking towards heaven? In each thing that you do, are you looking towards heaven? Because that's the most important thing. And that's what our eyes are for. This man was truly great. When I read the Bible sometimes, I find myself sometimes almost getting ill, because I condemn myself and I say, I'm not worthy to have received all of the things that I have received, and I don't have any way of returning anything to the Lord except that I will be converted and I will make him pleased that he gave me the things that he gave me. But up until this time, I can tell you I have failed him every single day of my life. I have not lived one good day. But I'm still unconfused about what the real goal is. I've just failed. It's like a little kid who's given a basketball for Christmas, right? And his father hangs the rim at 10 feet high, and he throws the basketball up as high as he can go, and the basketball goes 10 feet in the air. But it doesn't ever make it across the rim. He throws it up. That's me. I keep throwing it up. But one day it's going to go in. One day it's going to go in. And on that day, I hope the Lord takes me. It doesn't matter that it took me my whole life to get the ball through the hoop. It just matters that I don't give up, that I know where the hoop is, that the basketball, the world, is in my hand, and I am not something that's being manipulated by the world. I hold the world. I have control of the world, and I'm trying to make it through the hoop. And if that is so, then the Lord, I am certain, will look at me and say, well, it took you a doggone long time, but you made it. And I hope all of you make it. I'm not going to succeed unless you succeed. I'm not going to be happy unless all of you are happily ensconced in God's kingdom. I don't want anyone who here today thinks of themselves as being blind. You've been baptized. You've been chrismated. See the things that are important. Don't argue over the petty things. Look at the things that are important and focus on that. And may God have mercy on us all. We're going through a great time in our church, the greatest time in our church, actually. We have one more week, and we enter Holy Week. We will pray here on the Saturday of Lazarus, and we will start. And you know how many hours we will be in church. There's going to be something posted. Did you bring something today? Okay, so you're going to have to guess at it, because although he was told, Amina's got his hands full with Cyril. Actually, it's not his hands full with Cyril, that's the problem. It's more the other person in the house. Oma Cyril. So look, pray for my health. I know many of you have been, and I feel like I'm getting healthier, and I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to participate fully. But for your health, I want you to remember deeply why you come to church. It's the only place you can get this. There is no other competing institution in the world. This is the singular and most luxurious part of life. Don't miss out. Don't be blinded by the luster of other things. Turn your head from it and keep the focus on. Just as the guy who was teaching me how to race a car said, when you're in that turn, you don't look at anything except the apex of the turn and how you're going to come out of the turn and where you're going to point the car. And that's it. So do these things and live. Live with us all together in God's glory that he intended for us. Glory be to his holy name, both now and ever, to the age of ages.